Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we start, John, it's December. This is Discount December. We're going to give 10% discount on Patreon. And what you get for following us on Patreon is three things. Ad-free podcasts twice a week. You get two macroeconomic courses, not just one, two free. And also from January, I'm going to be answering questions once a fortnight. We're going to have an online macro session. And if you want to go up a level with us, you get a 10% discount for signing up on Patreon right now in December. Patreon.com/David McWilliams.
What in the world is happening on Wall Street?
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How you doing there? It is podcast time. On Tuesday, I was down in the dumps. I had the cold. John was worried about me. And now, look, listen to him.
Mouldy. You passed it on to me.
We're like a pair of lovers giving each other your diseases. Anyway, so I do apologize on air in advance to John. I have given him the cold. Yeah. I am now
delurgy.
I am now right as rain, chipper. And so rakes of Panadol, rakes of Lemsip.
And vodka and Lemsip.
Vodka and Lemsip. Oh, yeah, that was quite good. I enjoyed that one. And two nights skip.
Yeah, you'd be right that's as what rain. I need. You'd that right is what rain. I need.
Anyway, podcast time. We're going to apologize in advance to our non-Irish stroke, non-this part of the world, because we're going to talk a little bit about Britain and France. But excluding France, Britain and Ireland, we're going to talk a lot about politics in this part of the world and what things are happening, because there have been a series of polls in this country which dovetail with polls elsewhere, which really reveals that the new type of politics that has been coming through, and therefore new types of economics that has been coming through, is not a transitory phenomenon. This is real. This is about to take power in many, many countries. And the idea here is that maybe if you take the long view, maybe the 40-year cycle, or maybe even definitely the 40-year cycle that kind of started with Thatcher and Reagan in 1980. And it had as its economic philosophy, small government, low taxes, blaming government for problems rather than government delivering the solutions, by extension in financial markets, talking about shareholder value. That revolution, monetarist, liberal, right of centre revolution, is probably coming to an end. And what, like in all these revolutions, when they come to an end, they start as a revolutionary movement. They become mainstream, then the mainstream becomes the norm, then the norm becomes jaded, and within themselves, they have the seeds of their own destruction. And I think the seeds of the monetarist revolution, seeds of destruction, are the seed of inequality. So basically, you could have the economy going well, you could have extraordinary efficiencies in business, you could have globalization, you could have outsourcing, all that stuff. But the Achilles heel was the fact that the vast majority of the gains were not going to the average person, but they were going to the very, very top. So at the end, you get hyper inequality, and therein lies the seeds of the destruction, and you start again. And in the same way as what was replaced by Thatcher and Reagan was a big state world, maybe from 1945 to 1980, within that big state world, the seeds of the destruction were significant inflation, huge trade union movements, and the sense that the 1970s ended in sclerosis. So again, what you have is all these movements, they have a 3 or 4 decade lifespan, and then they begin to corrode from the inside out. And what we're seeing now is new politics. In Ireland, you have Sinn Féin emerging. In Britain, you have the Brexit stroke Tory revolution that was, although he's not looking very revolutionary now, Boris Johnson, John.
He's got a party hat on.
He has his party hat on. I mean, I love the fact that you get to a certain age in life and you start denying your partying.
Yeah.
When you're young, you're like, yeah, I was at that. That was great. But so what we're going to talk about is big, big politics. I'm going to help John today because he's out of sorts. He's living. He's got a big face in him. He's looking at me going, oh my God, he's gone off on one. But what we're going to do, John, is we're going to talk to Kev Cunningham because we need, because the pollsters have the detail, what people are actually thinking, what's really, really going down. So we're going to do, for an Irish audience and the Irish diaspora and the tribe out there, we're going to talk a lot about Ireland for the first about 15 minutes of this conversation. Then we're going to go into the UK and then we're going to look at one of the most interesting elections, which is the French election, John.
Yeah, absolutely. But Ireland is, I mean, it's relevant to everyone because Ireland is a microcosm of what's going on.
It was always a microcosm. We've always been a leading indicator of change, on the front foot always. Ireland, the leading indicator of global change. That's what this podcast is talking. So let's go and talk to Kevin Cunningham. Kev, how are you? Good to
great,
see you.
I'm great. I'm delighted to be here.
How are you?
You don't sound it.
I am.
Enthusiastic.
No, I am. I genuinely am. No, I'm enjoying this. I enjoyed the basement discussion.
We've lured you from the batter over to the deep south, to the Alabama of Dublin, and Dunleary here, the deep
the
south.
The Alabama, yeah. Okay.
Exactly. Tell us, there's been so many polls. I want to... Northern Ireland, United Ireland, Sinn Féin, Boris Johnson, the election in France, there's loads going on. Tell us about all these polls and the Shinners in United Ireland. What's going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's two big ones really at the minute. Right across the board in all the polls in Ireland, Sinn Féin are now massively ahead. That's partly because of the steady decline of Fine Gael. I mean, they've actually declined about 1% every month for almost 18 months, and they're a good bit behind. But then there's also this Northern Ireland feature with the United Ireland. That's a significant thing. We're talking about this all the time. We're trying to understand, is this likely to happen? There's a big poll out showing that 49% are in favour of staying within the United Kingdom and 41% going to the United Ireland, basically, up there.
So it's actually, that's closing quite quickly. That is, I mean, I did an event last week in Belfast on there's a movement called Ireland's Future. And it was really fascinating. It was extraordinary. And I gave the speech at it, the sort of keynote, because I actually think it will happen. But I think what I'm interested in now is the numbers and getting a little bit more detail. I think it'll happen eventually. I think everyone does.
Yeah.
But what I want to is give me a sense on the United Ireland of what the numbers are.
Yeah. So
facts.
So, yeah, it's a really important point. So there's actually two different polling companies doing a lot of work in Northern Ireland. There's Lucid Talk and a lot of the online companies, and they're showing it quite narrow. There's some other companies that do some face-to-face work, like the Northern Ireland Life and Times. And the gap there is much, much bigger in the Northern Ireland Life and Times polls, and they do a face-to-face. The problem with some of those other polls is that if you look at them, Sinn Féin are around 10% behind what they should be. Now, I'm not really sure why exactly that is. Maybe some people, when they answer the door, if they're Sinn Féin supporters, they're not responding to these pollsters. But I think based on what we understand from the other polls, there's a bit of an error there. So, yeah, in terms of the United Ireland thing, I mean, a lot of people look at it in terms of this demographic feature. They think that it's inevitable.
Baked in because of the numbers. Yeah.
And certainly, look, if you go back to the 2011 census, you've got 41% Catholic and 42% Protestant. So it looks quite close. And obviously the 2021 census should suggest that you're going to have a Catholic majority, right?
Yeah.
But I think to some extent that's an oversimplification of what's going on in Northern Ireland. In fact, sometimes people try to break that down and try to say, well, from that remaining 17%, or what background are you from? Again, to try to present it as just this straight down the middle contest. But there's a couple of other things going on. Firstly, that demographic change is slowing down significantly. There was big demographic changes in the 1990s, but those differences are...
There's a pro-Catholic...
The pro-Catholic direction, is you're talking about gaining around 2 or 3% per decade now at this point.
Yeah.
It's definitely slowing down. The other thing about that is even when there is a Catholic majority, that doesn't mean that there's an adult Catholic majority, right?
Yes.
Because the oldest subset of the population tend to be Protestant.
Yeah.
So there's a big gap there. Then the second big reason is that there's a significant softness in the Catholic vote, right?
Yeah, let's explore this a bit.
Yeah, so if you were to look at how people voted in the last, say, assembly election, and there is an assembly election next year, which is very, very important, and some might argue that if Sinn Féin get the First Minister, then maybe that's an argument for having a United Ireland debate again. But in terms of the parties, right, so pretty much all Sinn Féin voters and all DUP voters are as you'd expect they would be, right? But when it comes to the soft unionists, the UUP, they're a lot more in favour of the UK than, say, their comparators in the SDLP. So the SDLP are only around 60% in favour of United Ireland. So there's a lot more softness within that SDLP vote, basically.
So the soft nationalism is what
there's
we're talking about. Whereas amongst the unionists, it's pretty much hardcore.
It is definitely harder. And the most interesting thing is because the ethnicity thing, which is basically about Catholics and Protestants, doesn't really tell you very much about people's attitudes. When you ask people separately about their identity, whether they consider themselves British or Irish or Northern Irish, that's a much better predictor of how they are looking at, and we see this in the polls, how they are looking at the national question.
And what does that tell us?
Yeah, so people who consider, so as I said, if you're Catholic, you're about 80% likely to vote for United Ireland. If you're Irish, you're about 96%, right? But the thing about the British-Irish thing is that there's a third category that is very, very big, which is the Northern Irish identity, which is huge. It's, in fact, it's larger than the Irish identity. So it's, you know, Northern Ireland is breaking up in terms of about 48% British, 28% Irish and 29% Northern Irish from the last census. And that Northern Irish subset is actually growing more and more. Now, the British identity might have been damaged a little bit by Brexit because that middle ground, that kind of soft Protestant vote is kind of emerging as well a little bit because of Brexit. A lot of people who identify as Northern Ireland on the Unionist side, Northern Irish on the Unionist side, would have voted for a Remain. They would be more middle class. And in fact, that, even though in spite of the fact that the Sinn Féin and the DUP have won all these assembly elections, there is this underlying growth in the soft middle within Northern Ireland. I mean, one of the major reasons why people vote for the DUP or Sinn Féin is to try to guarantee that one or the other gets the First Minister position. So they're kind of being bullied a little bit into doing that, whereas this middle ground is opening up. And the Alliance Party got 16% in the last general election, if I remember correctly, and they did very well in the European election. So there is this kind of opening up. And I think rather than these kind of incremental small percentages in terms of this demographic change, the job of work really, if one wants to have a United Ireland, is actually convincing this middle ground, the soft Catholics and the Alliance voters, who are relatively evenly split, but a lot of people are undecided there, that this is a positive thing.
Now, can you explain to me, when you go a little bit deeper into the soft Catholic and Alliance votes, what are their attitudes about everything else? Are they broadly similar?
Oh, they're broadly similar to the other Catholics. I mean, one of the major issues up there is the protocol, right?
Yeah.
And they're in favour of the protocol. That breaks down perfectly on the kind of
nationalist lines. But in terms of liberal issues, because what always intrigued me is that Shannon and I were having a discussion about Ireland when she first met me, right?
Yeah.
There was no contraception here.
Yeah.
Right? Think about it. People of your generation and even younger find this impossible to understand. There was no divorce, right? Think about it, right? There was certainly no abortion. Okay, no gay marriage, nothing, right? And then this country went on this 30-year kind of journey of liberalism.
Mm.
And when you're in Northern Ireland, when I talk to my nephew, for example, right, and younger members of our family up there, they're liberal, they're tolerant, they want all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible that the North is going to go on this sort of liberal journey as well? And then the extreme DUP hardline on liberal issues will just look like anachronistic.
I mean, if that is the argument, I think it's a fairly plausible argument because there is significant majorities for the liberal perspective in Northern Ireland.
Yes.
You know, that's absolutely true. I know the DUP suffered quite significantly when they changed leader to someone who's really conservative and they got rid of the guy after a couple of weeks. I don't remember this. But
what was his name again?
Jesus.
I can't remember the DUP voter. I remember.
Poots.
Poots, good man,
thank
John.
You, Jesus. Yeah.
The DUP they would always prided themselves on, you know, we have a strong leader for ages because Paisley was there for 100 years.
Yeah,
and, and then he got rid of it. And now, of course, they have Donaldson, who is quite conservative as well, isn't he?
He's more moderate, definitely. I mean, he's from the EUP as well. So he's kind of come in from that moderate perspective. I think the interesting thing is the protocol, because he's now turned around on the protocol. He said he's in favor of this again.
As we say, the DUP, the party that never misses an opportunity to miss an opportunity.
Well, do you know the thing about the protocol, I think, is, and it's kind of like the way Brexit has made Scottish independence a little bit more difficult, is that the protocol obviously gives Northern Ireland this significant advantage.
I know.
An economic advantage. While it brings them economically closer to us, I mean, they're throwing away something significant if they decide to have a United Ireland, because it means that all of a sudden there's an additional trade deal required. Again, that's similar to Scotland, right? Whereas a new trade deal would be on the cards if Scotland decided to go independent. And that was, I mean, they were arguing last time over the shape of the coins, I think last time. It was whether they'd be able to still have the sterling. Now it's Scotland, completely different. It's a completely different.
And they've said to the Scots, okay, what currency are you going to use? What tax system are you going to use? And all that sort of stuff. But let's come back, right? So the data in the north is much less compelling than just your sectarian headcount. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a much bigger.
And so you think, from your perspective, you know, looking at the data, looking at the demographics, that the numbers are just not there for this United Ireland.
Not there within the next 20 years. I mean, you might have this marginal head on the basis solely of the headcount, right?
Yeah.
You have to convince that middle ground, because the middle ground is making up such a large proportion now that it's going to decide it either way. It's not just going to be the
case. So we could have a Sinn Féin First Minister for a long time before you get anything like a guaranteed majority for United Ireland. That's what you're thinking.
Yeah, that is true.
So that would be quite weird. You could have a Sinn Féin government here. You could have a Sinn Féin government in the north, and yet you have no real chance of a United Ireland on the basis of the demography.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? Do you think there will be a Sinn Féin government here?
Now, that's the next poll I want to go into, right? The next poll is it's difficult to get 80 seats in this country. That's
yes,
the thing.
It is, yeah.
So even if the polls, and you can tell me about them, are saying the Shinners could even get as much as 60 seats, which they could, right? Is that that's what the polls are saying?
Well, the numbers that you're getting at here is, if you look at the numbers on the basis of the current polling, Sinn Féin are going to need pretty much everything apart from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to get in on their own. They're going to need Labour, Social Democrats, Greens, and AIM 2 and all that. To get it. And actually, that just about gets there, basically, but that's very difficult.
So what you're saying is Sinn Féin, what are the polls saying in terms of the numbers for Sinn Féin right now?
Off the top of my head, you know, you're talking, depending on what poll you look at, Sinn Féin are kind of low to mid-30s. You're talking about 33-34% thereabouts.
Yeah. Right.
And Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are in the low 20s. So there's now a substantial gap. If you talk about the percentage of the parliament, we have a proportional system. So the easiest way to think about this is they're going to get low 30%. There's actually a little bit of a seat bonus as well that you can get when you get a higher percentage of the vote share. But yeah, that's broadly what they are.
So first of all, we're talking about Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael now as a bloc. This is like, it's quite interesting. You know, for all our history, they were never a bloc. But so now we're assuming that they're going to go together.
Well, I mean, so the only, I mean, did, sorry, I,
the Shinners
I know I come
Shinners
back
and Fianna Fáil.
The Shinners and Fianna Fáil is actually the only, and was the last election, at the end of the last election, the only really kind of, apart from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, obviously, which is what has happened, but Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil is definitely a viable government together. I mean, on basis of the current polling, they definitely will make the numbers, and they probably would make it next time as well, you know.
So what do you think the likelihood of that is?
It's a massive. One of the interesting things about Sinn Féin versus Fianna Fáil is they're so similar in so many different ways, right? Sinn Féin are promising low taxes and all the sorts of stuff that Fianna Fáil offered in the 1970s. But there's one thing that is just so different between them, and that's the Sinn Féin sort of internal discipline. You will never hear a Sinn Féin deputy or backbencher or anything like that complaining about the leader of their party. Whereas for Fianna Fáil,
that's every day.
That's just all the time. It's part of the course. And that's the problem for Fianna Fáil to go into government with Sinn Féin, because how do they do so if they're going to have this kind of internal, they're going to have a massive internal debate before they could ever even get to that stage.
But they have proven themselves as a party to be very capable of having internal debates and staying in power.
Yeah.
You know, if that's what they want to do. And of course, ultimately, if Fianna Fáil want to own the nationalist question, they will have to do some sort of deal with Sinn Féin, because Sinn Féin are an anathema to them if you think about it.
Yeah.
And tell me, let's go into the polls. Why are people voting for Sinn Féin? Why, when you ask people, when polls are asking, what are the reasons?
Okay, so if I can break this down very quickly to two, because some people are thinking about the long-term trends. There's a long-term trend here as well, where the two big parties have, generally speaking, declined since the 1980s, since what we're talking about earlier. Ireland has changed.
Yeah.
And in that period, Ireland used to be a complete outlier in European politics, and that every other European country had 30 to 55% voting for the left. That has changed significantly over time. So one of the major reasons why Sinn Féin is getting the vote it's getting is because it's just in the right place at the right time. You know, the Labour Party was only trying to fight out, trying to get that left-wing vote back in the day, and there was only around 15% who were willing to vote for a left-wing party. Nowadays, because it's a more secular, more well-educated country, there are significant differences and reasons why people are more likely to vote for left-wing parties today. And there's been a general shift towards people identifying as being on the left. And so that's this long-term trend, which doesn't necessarily relate to Sinn Féin, but it's just
they just happen to be there.
They happen to be there at the right place at the right time. And actually, that is also one of the reasons why when you ask people in open-ended text questions, why do you vote for Sinn Féin? They generally say, oh, change, or because I'm opposed to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And in a poll we've just done last weekend, we asked people directly this question. We listed the possible reasons that we found in previous open-ended questions: United Ireland policies, leadership team, Mary Lou.
Yeah. And what is it?
It's anti-Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and voting for change. That's what it
that is.
That is
it.
That is the dominant reason. There's a bit on the spokespersons. Clearly, Eoin O'Brien is actually quite popular among a certain subset of the population. But definitely, that is the dominant reason.
So it's an anti-establishment, anti the people who've been running this place for the last 70 years.
Yeah, definitely. That's exactly what it is. And obviously, there's an economic bent to this. You know, if you look at the demographics, if you look at the types of people that are supporting Sinn Féin, in the polls I do, the biggest demographic for them is the 25 to 34-year-old group. And within that, among males, they're getting almost 50% of that vote. So it's a renter population as well. They're well over 40% among those that are renting, and lots of other demographics. In fact, what's alternatively interesting from a media perspective is that Sinn Féin do okay around 20% of the vote on people who, say, watch RTE or people who read The Independent or read The Irish Times. But outside of that, they're 40% on everything. Like local papers, don't read newspapers, tabloids, everything else outside that kind of, that perhaps bubble maybe is
establishment.
Is the thing.
We're back to that idea.
Yeah.
And tell me about the UK. Are the UK now doing polls about United Ireland? Are the UK now doing polls on Sinn Féin? Is there an interest now from the UK that wasn't there, let's say, 12 months ago, 18 months ago?
Yeah, there definitely is. I mean, as I mentioned to you before, I've had a couple of phone calls from lots of different newspapers asking about the rise of Sinn Féin, even this week. I'm pretty sure that they're covering a number of stories about the rise of Sinn Féin. And a lot of that was come even before the polls that have come out relatively recently. So there's definitely a concern over there. I mean, I remember being over there when I was working in politics over there. And it was kind of funny is that sometimes people would sort of say to you, oh, we don't want Northern Ireland, we'll give it back to you. And, you know, in our political strategy and everything, we produce maps and everything. We produce a map of Britain. There would never be kind of strategic maps that would even account or include or look at Northern Ireland. It just was like
another place.
Yeah.
A foreign place for them.
Out of sight, out of mind. You know, it was not interesting to them at all. Now, obviously, with Sinn Féin coming up and down here and obviously in the north, it creates a different dilemma. It's obviously interesting. It's a kind of interesting story because, you know.
Now, can I ask you, do you think the Sinn Féin vote is permanent or temporary?
This is a fantastic question because I think it's a very soft vote. I think a lot of people look at that Sinn Féin vote and assume that it's a hardened vote, that all these people, I mean, a lot of the people who are saying that they're voting for Sinn Féin have not done so yet. You know?
Yeah.
The other thing about it is when you usually leadership ratings and party ratings track one another, right? So like a leader is popular, the party is popular. You can see it in the UK today, Boris Johnson is not particularly popular and the Conservative Party have...
I want to ask you that before we go, but the shambles that is down the street. But go on.
But for Sinn Féin, that's not the case. Mary Lou McDonald's personal approval rating, no matter what poll you look at isn't significantly better than that of Leo Varadkar or Micheál Martin. And that reflects what we've seen in this other part of the poll, that it's not really Mary Lou McDonald that's actually driving this. And maybe that's a positive, because maybe if she has a bad day, then it doesn't really matter because they're going to be up there, because again, it comes back to this thing that people just don't want to vote for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. There's another kind of separate thing, and I sometimes think, is that governments never really have the support of more than 45% of the public.
At any stage.
At any stage, really. Yeah. And so if two big parties go in together, they're just going to be squeezed into that 45% no matter what it is. So that's kind of also what's happening, really. So,
but what you're suggesting also is that the Sinn Féin poll numbers, for listeners, there's no implicit certainty that this will lead to them being in power.
Yeah, there is another
thing. Let's tease that one out a bit.
Yeah, so there's another thing that we've seen in democracies right throughout the world, and this is this increasing volatility. There's a thing called the Pedersen Index, which measures the extent to which the change in vote share of a given party from one election to the next. And when you look at that and you track that across all the countries over time, it's clear that we're in a decade of hyper-volatility in terms of the extent to which people are voting and changing their minds. So sure, the polls today are very good for Sinn Féin. And look, they may actually carry this support into the next general election, but there's absolutely no guarantee that that will be the case. There's been a lot of elections relatively recently, and we've talked about them before, in Germany, where the SPD, probably the most boring party you can imagine, all of a sudden came up, surged.
And they're now winning.
And exactly.
They have the boss, the top job.
Absolutely.
And there was a fear about 4 years ago that the SPD would disappear.
Yeah, it was the one that we were all going, this is the death of social democracy.
Yeah.
And the SPD was the best case in point, you know, and they were going into coalition governments. We're like, right, this is exactly what's going on here. And then they just recover out of nowhere. I mean, out of all the political parties in that system, they're the most like one that you would say that they're not going to do anything.
Yeah, they've got a bang in the 70s off, and they really have. They really do. And so,
but who else? I mean, the other one was like, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn, right? And yeah, I'm not saying that he did particularly well, but that election that he had in 2017 came out of nowhere. You know, the Conservative Party was 20% ahead when the election was called, and then ended up 2%, only 2% ahead on the actual polling day itself. It was stunning. And this sort of stuff happens. This happened in the last Irish general election. So there's no guarantee, because when we poll people, I think a lot of people, like if I went on the street and asked someone out there, you know, who are you going to vote for in the next general election? It's a ridiculous question to ask people.
It is, because people's heads are not even in that sort of space. Yeah.
There isn't a general election tomorrow. Like, that's just nonsensical, right? So I think a lot of people actually think about it when the election is called. And I think that seems to be
what's happening. And things can shift. But can I ask you one thing about this Sinners? Because there seems to be two distinct camps in Ireland. Well, there's many, but one of them is the Sinners, anyone but the Sinners, right?
Yeah.
And that's very popular in the media.
Yeah.
And it's very popular in the establishment. And there's this huge fear, and they say, are they still run by the Army Council and yada, 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 right? So that's anyone but the Sinners, right?
Yeah.
But is there not, even for those people, the anyone but the Sinners, is there not a sort of a cathartic moment where an insurgent party kind of has to come into power in order for them to prove, well, are they an insurgency or are they something real?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The more that the Irish establishment, even after a tight general election, does the back behind the scenes sort of smoke-filled room deal with independence and Labour and la la to keep the Sinners out, the stronger they're going to get.
Yeah.
So I mean, is there not, like, if you're thinking of the long term, if you're a real political strategist here for one of the big parties, Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or one of those, is there another thing, part of you says, look, let them win?
Look, I totally agree. And it relates to our French friend that we were going to talk about. And it's this idea of, you, if you amplify the idea of someone is this scary thing, because this is the problem I have, is that the people who might say that thing is really scary, don't touch that, aren't really the most trusted people in society, unfortunately, right? It'd be great if politicians and journalists and everything were one among the most trusted people in society, but unfortunately, they're the least trusted. So it's like my enemy's enemy is my friend sort of thing goes on here. So I think when people try to push these guys outside the cordon sanitaire, it actually gives them a little bit more of excitement, a little bit more, there's a bit of a risk, a bit of chance here, who's going, you know.
So, yeah, and I mean, like, it's when the Sinners have to talk about raising taxes or balancing budgets, all these sort of things. When you normalize politics and you normalize a party, and then people say, well, you know, you said you were going to build 50,000 houses and there's 28,000 built.
Yeah.
And house prices are still rising and rent's still a problem. That's when a party becomes either a permanent thing or a transitory thing.
Well, it just reminds me of this weakness in the Sinn Féin coalition, the fact that they have these two groups of voters and they're presenting policies such as the carbon tax. They're not in favour of carbon taxes and they're not in favour of property tax. And on those two issues, that subset of the population that is quite left-wing, I guess, that's not going to be particularly popular because that looks very much like Fianna Fáil in the 1970s, not in favour of dealing with these sorts of problems. And
well, I mean, the property tax is the weirdest one because the left in Ireland, even the extreme left in Ireland, are against property taxes, which seems to make no sense.
Yeah,
because if you're not taxing property, you're taxing income, you're taxing people.
Yeah.
And it's a very strange one. But let's leave the Ireland, let's leave this island. I want to go to the UK and then I want to go to France, right? What about our friend Johnson? He's been partying, he's been having babies, he's been the whole thing.
I mean,
I'm watching Peppa Pig, of course.
Watching Peppa Pig,
watching Peppa Pig. Well, it's very interesting. Obviously, you know, there's this scandal where they had this party, Pippa Crerar of The Mirror reported on it, and then a couple of days later the ITV released this footage and it was clear that actually they had a party and all this kind of denial is coming out.
But it was also on a day that there was huge numbers in infections and deaths.
Oh, the actual day of the party?
Yes.
Yeah. They had an awful time in 2020, the UK. Mm. You know, they really, I think, were scarred. But obviously it's very open now, but I mean, the two times in which Boris Johnson's support has dipped, one was during the summer of 2020, where they weren't doing particularly well in relation to COVID, and then this time. So it's fascinating to see the Labour Party is now, for the first time, with Boris Johnson in charge, ahead, 8 points ahead in the latest YouGov poll, as I saw. And that is quite significant. Now, it's
8 points is huge.
Yeah, 8 points is a jump. And so this has had a very clear and definitive effect. And it's quite interesting why something like this can have an impact on the popularity of a leader, and so many other things perhaps in the past didn't. And I think it's because the pandemic is something that a lot of stories obviously are just kind of inside baseball, not really people pay much attention. But this pandemic, I think everyone had to do certain things. Everyone,
and behave in a certain way.
Yeah. And it's a certain thing, I think, that really undermines politics and government if they kind of are seen to be not behaving by the rules which everyone else is behaving by, and they're telling everyone to do. So like, it's the pandemic is a fascinating thing because I can normally, if I do a poll on some topic, it might be too inside baseball. It might be not something that people are generally recognizing. But the pandemic is quite interesting because everyone has an opinion on COVID-19 and restrictions and openings and
vaccinations and everything. Yeah.
Because you have to pay attention to it. And I think the reason why Boris Johnson is getting done by this is because everyone paid attention to those restrictions and everyone is paying attention to what he's done and what he's not done in this particular case.
And can he get out of this?
Well, it's a long time until the next general election. I mean, I remember when we were 12 points ahead at the same time in the cycle and we got absolutely smashed.
We being the Labour Party,
yeah.
But just for listeners, you know that Kev worked for the Labour Party in the UK. But you were, yeah. Will there be leadership change?
For Boris Johnson?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so there's a very interesting by-election coming up on Thursday, North Shropshire by-election. And it's quite interesting because the Conservative Party would have gotten 60-odd% in the last general election there. The Lib Dems only got around 10%. I think Labour got around 20%. And normally you'd look at that as a Labour-Tory marginal, but the Liberal Democrats released an internal poll presenting it as a Lib Dem-Tory marginal. Mm. Labour released their own internal poll presenting it as a Labour Tory marginal, but the Guardian took that first information and maybe it was done by some professional pollster or something, but it was only of postal voters, so it's a bit of dodgy data basically, presenting this as this contest between these two, and now the whole thing has coalesced on this fight between the Lib Dems and the Conservatives. And bear in mind that as I said, the Tories got 60% last time, Lib Dems got 10%. But now the Lib Dems are actually favourite to win this in this by-election. And if they win that,
yeah,
that's when he could be in trouble, because that's a real signal, I think, to the other members of his yeah. government that actually the show is over, or the show is certainly not as good as it was.
Well, it's interesting. A couple of weeks ago, I did an event with Philip Hammond, the former Chancellor UK, who is a very, very decent guy, very, very funny. But he was talking about the Conservative Party. And he was just saying, look, you know, the Conservative Party love a winner. Doesn't matter. But if Boris is not a winner, then he's gone.
That's the same.
You know, like, so look, he can do whatever. He can deny he's got children. He can have this, that, there, as long as he's winning, right?
Yeah.
But if it turns, they will turn against him.
That's
but the question then is, who replaces him before an election, or do they go and lose the election?
Rishi.
I was just going to say. Rishi Sunak, yeah.
Yeah.
Replaces him straight away.
Well, he's the obvious candidate. He's very popular. He is actually very popular.
Is he very popular amongst the grassroots or in the UK in general?
In the general population, yeah.
Right, he's regarded
as... His approval rating is quite big, yeah.
So he'd be a serious threat.
He's
to Johnson.
The obvious choice, yeah.
And you'd go from chaos to competence in one move.
Yeah, he looks good, I guess, you know. He looks confident.
Now, speaking of big countries, competence, let's go to France, because this character, Zemmour, came out of nowhere. Well, he was a TV star, wasn't he? He was a TV show.
Yeah, he was a journalist. He's interesting because he was an intellectual sort of, you know, he basically is the Bolsonaro of France, is the way you can put it.
That's right.
So, okay. And this seems to be a playbook now at this stage. So you go on television and you speak, you know, absolute garbage to attract attention. You just say whatever the hell you want. One of his lines was, unaccompanied foreign minors were thieves, murderers and rapists.
This is the Trump playbook as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, the difference between him and Trump is obviously that he has a bit of brains behind him. He was studied at the elite universities of science, CSSCO.
Trump was in Wharton.
He's Trump of Wharton.
Wharton, right here.
The one.
Trump wrote a book, didn't he, I think?
The Art of the Deal. The Art of the Deal. I love that book.
But yeah, so also the French citizens should only be allowed to give their kids French names. So that was gas as well. But he's
basically no Mohammed, no Ahmed, Faisal. Yeah. That's what he's saying.
Yeah. He's also due on trial for incitement to hatred. So he is pushing this thing out. He's not a stupid man.
And he's a Jewish racist.
Yes.
Which is another strange thing.
There was some perverse thing he was suggesting, that Vichy France was good to the Jews or something like this, that they protected them, even though there was some particular character that actually was particularly bad in that regard. Yeah, it was some stunning stuff.
So he's a really perplexing combination of characteristics.
Yeah.
But he's popular.
He is significantly popular. He's interesting. He is now sort of in fourth place. In fact, he was actually in second place until only a week or two ago. One of the interesting things is he's obviously far right, but his support differs slightly from that of Le Pen, in that you're talking about higher social grades. You're talking about public intellectuals. He does relatively well among the upper middle class, older people and among men. And she does well among kind of the traditional blue collar type worker. So they're coming at that same vote from relatively different perspectives. And I think one of the interesting things here is that those two candidates, himself and Le Pen, now he actually argued that Le Pen is speaking like Macron and Macron is speaking like Le Pen, which I think is an interesting and probably arguably true definition of what's going on. But he is doing relatively well. But in any second round against Macron, he has no chance, really. So I think there's something that has to be discussed between himself, Le Pen, and even this other third guy, Dupont-Dagnan, if I can pronounce that correctly, who's a kind of another kind of Eurosceptic on around 2%, who might make up the difference between the two, as to see who might actually potentially get into the second round. But yeah, he's a fascinating, well, he's an interesting character, but he's part of the same idea, this attract attention at all costs, no matter how ridiculous you say it. People will, like we will, say how ridiculous this guy is and what's he saying, but he then gets attention.
And he does connect with people.
And then people who are completely disaffected with the system go, I kind of like him. Speaks the truth or whatever, you know, that sort of stuff.
John, the platform was yours. I can see a John Davis demagogic character in the next election.
The plans are in place already, Mac.
I can sense it. You've secretly been using this podcast as a platform for many years to ventilate your mad ideas. Yeah. Yeah, that was really interesting. I mean, around the houses.
That was great.
Around the houses. And Kev, really, that was great. Thanks a million.
Great. Thanks a million, guys.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Interesting stuff as always from Kevin. But Zenmore,
I think. Yeah.
Where did he come from? I never heard of him
telly,
before.
Which is always
the telly.
He came from the telly. He's like your man.
That's the worst telly. Place to come from.
When he came back, he came from the telly. He was a French journo, but as Kev was saying, kind of intellectual journo, TV guy, etc. And a bit like having, for example, your man Hanratty, is that his name? Hannity?
Sean
Hannity. Imagine, like, for example, David McCullough from Primetime going for presidency.
Well, in fairness now, Schwarzenegger came from the big screen.
He did.
As did Reagan. And also, by the way, and harken back to our last podcast, your man Zelensky from Ukraine is also off the telly.
He's a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Dara O'Brien, there's something for Dara. If Dara decides, he's going to just jack it in over and Have I Got News For You. And who else was on Have I Got News For You? Boris Johnson.
Big Boris.
The telly is the way forward.
That is the way. And of course, you know, reality man himself, Trump as well.
Yeah, I mean, but also the TV is publicity to people. TV is recognition. And if you start with this idea that, you know, the usual thing, all politics are the same. Mm. People say, they're all the same, right? Well, then if you denigrate people's policies to such an extent, then what actually matters is recognition. And the TV gives enormous recognition to lots and lots of people.
Yeah.
But it is interesting because France is being dragged to the right. The UK is being dragged to the right. We are being dragged to the left. But there's many people would argue that in the broad umbrella of Sinn Féin are many elements that are both on the right and the left.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. But
was there anything surprising in that for you?
Look, I think, and it's a weird thing to say on the podcast, I think it's probably about time that Sinn Féin got a chance. You know, you can't orchestrate politics all the time on keeping these people out. There has to be something more for politics, you know? And if they are getting the lion's share of the young vote, if they are accelerating in the polls, maybe it's time to think, okay, Sinn Féin in power. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. You know, because that's democracy. Yeah. But the interesting thing is, because our system, as Kevin elucidated, is so particular in taking away the power of the big party, which is a good default position.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get these massive majorities like they have in the UK, right? Or in many other countries, right? Sinn Féin will need... And they, of course, they will learn how to do deals with everybody. Then once you start doing deals with people, then you're kind of compromised. Yeah. You're a little bit, you're not very pure. Well, you're not very pure if you're doing deals and suddenly you end up building, you know, let's say community halls in parts of the country just in order to get the vote of the local TD. You're in bed with the likes of Michael Lowry, you're, you know, Matty McGrath. Suddenly you're not the revolutionary purist you were.
Yeah.
You're actually the practical politician that you must be to be in power. So I don't know. Let's see. I don't see what the problem is. I really don't. I mean, I know that lots and lots of people might be listening and say this, that, and whatever, but I think...
It could be. I agree with you. It could actually be a good thing in the short term.
It's also time a bit for our generation and the older generation to maybe step aside and give it to the younger people. John, it's Crimbo.
It is.
Here's the sales pitch. You can get, can you imagine anything better than this? You can get 12 months Patreon subscription to the Dave McQueen's podcast, which is two podcasts ad-free every week. You get two macroeconomic courses, the economic courses I give in Trinity, more or less online.
Which are humdingers.
Which are humdingers, okay, which we actually won a prize.
Indeed.
We won a prize.
Indeed.
Swati Teacher of the Year. But we get all the reading lists. You know the reading lists I go on about? All the reading lists, the lecture notes, videos, the whole thing. And you get these, we're going to introduce this year, an online Q&A. Once a fortnight, I'm going to answer the questions that people have. This is all on Patreon.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, no, it will be really good. And it'll create a huge community of people. This is all on Patreon. And you get a 10% discount if you sign up in December. So that's patreon.com/David McWilliams. And if you sign up now to Patreon, you get 12 months for the price of 11 months for an annual subscription. And, or you can look at it by getting 10% off for the whole thing. And the key thing is, it's not just the podcast. It's the learning, it's the community, it's the engagement, it's all together. We're going to go up a level
in
2022.
Do you know what as well? It's a bloody brilliant Christmas present.
You're absolutely right.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.